It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And good morning to you,
Cecil. Good morning, Lockwood. How are you?
Fine. We were talking at length last week about wills and estate planning, and I kind of got off the topic there because
That's okay. A
conversation we had had. Well, it was interesting in what to do with wills if you are a resident from outside the area, and how do you approach that, and also what do you do with your assets that are not in the state in which you are resident. But you said something at the beginning, and I just want to make mention. You were talking about the five documents.
Right. Well, just to review, you know, folks, Lockwood, make an appointment to come to see us, and they say, of course, you know, we're here to talk about making out a will. And that's a great thing. But very few people at our office, in fact, I think that, you know, competency standards, if you will, require that the lawyer very much discuss with the client these other very critical documents. And they are the last will and testament, of course, as we just mentioned, but also a durable power of attorney, a health care power of attorney, a living will or declaration of desire of natural death, and then lastly, a HIPAA release. Are the things that every lawyer should really be discussing with their client. And so also you listeners who are listening, if you, it would serve us all well if we would pull out our documents and pull out our important documents and make sure that those things are there. Some of these documents, such as really the health care power of attorney, even the Declaration of Desire for Natural Death, and most recently the HIPAA release, are you know, relatively recent documents. And if you had your documents done 10 years ago, you may not have those documents. You also may not have up-to-date documents. The power of attorney, for instance, really is a document that's always changing, always evolving, Lockwood, because of the fact that there are cases in North Carolina that address certain powers and what is needed by the attorney, in fact, the agent under the power of attorney, gifting, tax issues, other kinds of authority issues. And so the power of attorney many times we see is kind of a living and breathing document. And we probably alter the paragraphs in our power of attorney, you know, once or twice a year.
Really?
Yes. Now, you know, we can't call and do not call every single client to have them re-execute a new power of attorney. But about every 3 to 5 years, 7 years at the max, you should have these documents looked at and reviewed, because there have definitely been, and there are, always are, changes in the law. The legislature and the Congress are out there making changes. And, of course, then the document has to conform. Okay. But these other documents are really critical, Lockwood, and I think we've talked about them before on the program. We have information at our office, written materials, if anyone is interested in knowing what the definition more readily is of these documents. But we all know about the will. The power of attorney, of course, is a document where you appoint an agent to act for you, to sign your legal papers, to be responsible for your financial assets, to be able to sign your tax return, to be able to deal with your IRAs, your retirement benefits, anything and everything having to do with your financial life if you're unable to, if you're in an accident, if you are ill or sick. And the alternative to not having this very straightforward document, which is not expensive, I might add as well, is a full guardianship proceeding, which is really what we always want to avoid. That's very expensive, time consuming, very emotional for the family. Then, of course, there's the health care power of attorney, similar to the financial. It gives someone the authority to make health care decisions. The Declaration of Desire for Natural Death, pretty much what it says.
Is that part of the health care power?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a separate document.
Okay.
Saying that if we're terminal or incurable, We authorize the physician to withhold extraordinary measures, including artificial mm-hmm. nutrition, artificial right. hydration. And then lastly, this new HIPAA release, which gives your loved one the authority right now for any reason to be able to get to your medical information. It may just be a matter of convenience that you need to be able to get to your mom's right. medical records or your great aunt's medical records. But it gives you the authority to be able to discuss issues with the physician without necessarily that person being incompetent. See, the healthcare right. power of attorney is in existence to give someone the authority to act for you if you're unable to act.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's a matter of convenience that we also want our children to be able to be on record with our physician and with the medical world.
All right. Of course, we're chatting with Cecil Harvell about the issue of wills and estate planning. And I've got several quick questions for you,
sure.
Cecil. I just want to mention a story related to HIPAA, one that I find still shocking, but it's, I think, an important story. And I was talking to a mother. This is years ago after the HIPAA law had just been instituted. And her daughter, who was a minor, had a medical event which required a call by the emergency services, rescue squad. They took her to the hospital. They checked out the young lady. Mm-hmm. She seemed to be fine. They sent her home. And in the process, the young lady was going on to Florida to visit with her grandmother. And after a while, the mother said, "Well, you look fine. Go ahead. And if there's any call from the hospital, we'll just wait for their response, for they'd run some tests."
Mm-hmm.
Well, while the young lady was in Florida, the mother got the phone call from the hospital, and this is a local hospital, I might add. And when the mother said, they said, "We've got information related to the young lady," and they mentioned her name, the mother said, "Well, she's not here. She's with her grandmother in Florida. You can tell me." And they said, "No, we can't."
Right.
I mean, that's an amazing story.
Well, you mentioned that to us last week, and I think, Lockwood, that as you mentioned, that was several years ago, mm-hmm. and probably at a time that the law was first initiated, and the medical community at that time was running a bit confused and scared and cautionary about mm-hmm. all of this. I don't really think that a parent of a minor child, unless there's been a court order whereby, you know, custody is at question, but the custodial legal parent of the child, I think, has access to the medical records, without, you know, signing, mm-hmm. A HIPAA form. After all, a minor cannot sign legal documents,
just
by the way.
That's
okay.
Right, yeah.
Let's just go back to basics here. Right. I mean, a 10-year-old child cannot fill out a HIPAA release and
right.
consider it to be a valid form, a valid document. Cannot make out a last will and testament. Cannot sign a power of attorney. Not a 10-year-old child, not a minor. So again, if all systems are go, there's not some unusual circumstance with custody, of that nature, I think that parents can get to their children's medical records. But once the child becomes 18, and that's what's very interesting. And trust me, I know about that one. I have an 18-year-old daughter. And when she went off to school this year, one of the forms in the orientation package was, in fact, this HIPAA release.
Wow.
So that, you know, she's a, you know, 18-year-old, this, you know, she's still a little girl as far
right,
as I'm
right,
concerned.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and, but the college wants to make sure that they have access to be able to talk to me, and her mom if for some reason, you know, something were to happen on the campus.
It's all basically protection for the company or the
And they get 18 very quickly.
you're listening to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell. By the way, if you'd like to call in with a question, you can do so. 800-818-2255. Locally in the 910 area code, if we're listening on, it's 353-4674. And of course, the 252 area code, 247-7282. I'll give you information about their offices as well. That's the right advice at the right time at Harvell and Collins. You know, it's... We're chatting with Cecil Harvell about wills and estate planning and something that said at the outset, and it's just want to reiterate. You go to Harvell Collins and you start seeking, you want to talk to them about wills. And, Cecil, you said in addition to the information about the will, you're going to give, the visitor.
Absolutely. These other documents need to be discussed and clients, you know, need to understand them and know that they're out there. And what the purpose of these documents are. And sometimes a client might have one of these documents already. Maybe mm-hmm. they have a health care power of attorney or a living declaration of natural death. They have that already. If they do, great. We'll review that. But at the end of the process, all of these things should be there for us in an important place. Now, Lockwood, over the break, there is each one of these documents. We could do a program on each mm-hmm. one right. of these documents. Right. You know, all sorts of the issues concerning the durable power of attorney, even what the word durable mean. Very quickly, durable means that the power of attorney exists throughout the duration of our incapacity. Okay. That it is effective during the duration of our incapacity. The healthcare proxy. Mm-hmm. Each one of these documents could warrant discussion. Over the break, one of the ones that really gets kind of glossed over a little bit is, in fact, this declaration of desire of natural death. And you know, clients ask, well, Cecil, I think that I will reduce it and put it in my glove compartment.
Right.
You know, should my wife carry it around mm-hmm. with her in mm-hmm. her pocketbook? Right. That kind of thing. And the answer to the question here, now I'm referring to the declaration of desire of natural death.
Right.
And the response that I have to give to clients is that is not a document that is not a do not resuscitate. That's a different animal.
Okay.
And this is not a document that is relied upon under emergency circumstances. By its very definition, we have to be in a persistent vegetative state or terminal incurable. If we are in an accident, if we have a heart attack, if we have a stroke, if we have any acute or emergency situation, the emergency room and the emergency room physicians are, of course, going to do everything that they can do, heroic measures, to get us to what might be known as maximum medical improvement. We're going to be ventilated. We're going to be artificially fed for some time or given nutrition. This is just inevitable. It's after many weeks that there's uh-huh. been an established record,
uh-huh.
okay, that we are not responding, that we are in a vegetative state, that we are persistently staying there, or that we're terminal and incurable, and that nothing now is keeping us alive but the artificial means. Then at that point, after there's been the establishment of a medical record, which cannot happen within an hour,
right.
I'm talking weeks,
mm-hmm.
okay, then the family, if there is a living will, it's very likely that the physicians will discuss with the family going ahead and terminating the life support.
Would it be mm-hmm. appropriate, or do you also include a paragraph in the living will related to DNR, do not resuscitate, or is that something that is done apart from?
Yeah. A do not resuscitate is not within, Lockwood, our prerogative. Okay. Let me explain.
All right.
A do not resuscitate is like a prescription, if you will, from a medical doctor. It is an order from a medical doctor that based on this patient's medical record, and again, based on their chronic and well-established medical history, and probably some starts and stops along the way,
mm-hmm.
okay,
right.
that I, the physician, after having discussed this with the family, hereby enter an order saying that should certain circumstances begin to occur, I authorize the medical team not to resuscitate. That is an order of the doctor, like a prescription, if you will, based on all of the medical history. You and I, in good health, let's hope, I think we are, Lockwood, are just not going to be able to say, thank you very much, but I do not want to be resuscitated.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, man.
We're going to have to get we're going to talk to our doctor friend to get that. Okay. All right.
So, all right. Okay. This comes back to a subject you mentioned a moment ago, and it has to do with records and record keeping. And you mentioned laminating. So after this break, I want to talk about that. Where do we keep these records?
Sure.
With Cecil Harvell, we're talking Let's Talk Legal here on Coastal Daybreak on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. The right advice at the right time. By the way, just to remind you, harvellandcollins.com, where, by the way, this program is rebroadcast on their website, harvellandcollins.com. I'll give you the phone number here in just a moment here on Coastal Daybreak. Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell this morning, and we're talking about wills and estates and planning. And Cecil, a few moments ago, you mentioned someone laminating there.
Well, I'm just saying get that question.
But wait a second. What do we do with our paperwork? Where do we keep it?
That's a great question, and there are a couple of answers. First of all, just so our listeners know, historically, a lot of folks kept things in their safety deposit box.
Mm-hmm.
They then, of course, were told not to keep them in their safety deposit box because the box was locked at death.
Right.
That is not the case anymore, okay? The clerk of court is not required by law to inventory the safety deposit box. There's a change in the law, okay? You have access to your lockbox at any point, but you have to be the deputy on the box. So in other words, you know, just for you to have your box and then you to be the one that dies and there be no key available and there be no deputy, that's a problem, okay? So make sure that you have your executor signed in on your lockbox. I really don't recommend that they be kept in your lockbox. What our protocol is that we keep the original documents. The law office maintains the original documents in a vault system. There's a reason for that in a moment, which I hope I can discuss. And then a completely conformed copy of the original documents you keep at home in a strong box or in an important place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're also welcome to take a photostatic copy and put it in your lockbox. But we maintain the originals. There are lots of reasons for this, Lockwood. You know, we are a profession.
Right.
We do try diligently and very sincerely to do the best that we can do for the clients that engage us. And so let's talk about why we might keep the originals. First of all, sometimes we get old and we start marking on our originals.
Exactly.
Okay? And we don't realize the impact of that.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Right.
I mean, this happens to me all the time that someone will show up with their originals marked all over how they want it changed. Okay? Secondly, someone can get a hold of our originals under undue influence factors, elder abuse factors, and destroy them or attempt to alter them in some way, okay, our originals. Thirdly, when we have the originals, particularly the powers of attorney, and things begin to decline in a family, then we are put in the loop because the child needs to call us. This happens all the time. Every day there's a call from a child saying, Mom is not doing well at all.
Right.
Can you please get out her power of attorney? That puts us in the loop with that child, which they usually greatly appreciate, to discuss really the ongoing circumstances. Well, tell us about this. Is she about to go into a nursing home?
Right.
Is there something we should do? How are you setting up the power of attorney account? Do you want to come in and let's discuss this? That kind of thing. So it puts the lawyer in the loop for the client. Keep in mind that, you know, we serve the client,
right,
not the son or daughter, but the elder person.
Good point.
At that point would like for us to be in the loop,
right,
more than likely,
yeah,
to help their daughter, to help their son. Sometimes they're coming in from out of town.
Right.
And if they have a contact, someone they can discuss things with, then, and we have the documents, then that, is a good thing. So it's a great way to safeguard the integrity of the original for your lawyer to maintain it, as well as to keep your professional, in the loop in the family.
All right. I see a note. We've got a question from a caller, and I'm going to get to that in a moment, but I want to stay on this topic very quickly. You mentioned the importance of the original, Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
The original document is important. In other words, if it's marked on, does it in some way jeopardize the, if you will, the document?
It depends, of course. It many times does. I mean, if it's correcting a spelling error,
right.
Like for instance, our daughters are always, or many times now this day and age, their last names change.
Mm-hmm.
50% of the time due to the divorce rate.
Right.
And so a parent goes in and marks out Jones and puts Smith. Well, that won't obliterate the document. But if you start changing, percentages or certain assets or things of that nature, absolutely, you create ambiguity make the document non-enforceable.
Okay. Cecil Harvell, of course, with Harvell and Collins and The Right Advice, The Right Time. We had a caller with a question. By the way, the website, harvellandcollins.com, the phone number, 252 area code, 726-9050, 726-9050. Cecil, the question was, the maximum amount you can sue for in small claims court
is $10,000.
$10,000
right.
Raised that much.
Right.
All right. To Cecil Harvell, thanks very much for being with us this
Thank
morning.
Thank you.
All right. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.